All right, and welcome to another episode of the Epic Phelan Podcast. We have back with us movie producer, director, Mike Peterson. How you doing, Mike?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks. I just found out the other day that this commercial that I directed and helped write and produce has won a bunch of awards in the advertising world. I make the odd commercial here and there, but I'm not deep in the ad world. I don't actually know what they mean, but I've heard that they're very prestigious and, you know, they're good awards to win. So that's exciting.
What's the commercial, can I ask?
Yeah, it's for this clean energy company called Ever, based in Alberta. And we made a high concept commercial with a bunch of people sticking their heads in the sand and pulling their head out when the new energy source comes, and like a Mad Max sci-fi post-apocalyptic world, and shot it over the pandemic with, you know, a small number of people outdoors, and they were very trusting with the creative, which was nice. And then they've been really great about, I guess, sending it out to these awards shows and whatnot. And we won some AVA awards, AVA awards, and some Marcom awards. If those mean anything to anyone.
I'm sure they do.
Anyway, it's cool to see everyone's work get celebrated.
It's awesome, and to get recognition for your work and just being creative and getting a response from it is awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's nice. It's nice. And you never know what'll happen to what exactly.
Yeah. So last time we talked, and we're talking a lot about Harpoon, and we're talking about Bloodthirsty. How's that?
Yeah, Bloodthirsty, it's got U.S. distribution now, Canadian, and then it's got international sales in place. I think it'll come out in April in North America. I'm sure we'll know the exact date soon, but sometime mid-April, I'm guessing. So that'll be exciting. You know, will there be theaters open for it to play in? You know, time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell. Yeah,
I'm hoping that they played at a drive-in somewhere.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping, because I want to go see a movie that I helped make.
In a drive-in. Yeah. I haven't been to a drive-in in years, and I love them. I just like love the concept.
I took my kids to a drive-in over the summer, and they're like, what do you mean you sit in your car and watch a movie? How do you hear it? This doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, no, it's on your radio in the car. They're like, what? How does it get on the radio? This is crazy. It blew their minds. We went and saw the Michael Keaton Batman.
Nice. Who is Batman for you? Is it Keaton or is it Bale or...
When I think about it, I always think of Michael Keaton first.
Oh, really?
Yeah, even though I think the Christian Bale one is probably a bit better in some ways. I mean, it's more gritty, I guess. The first thought that always comes to mind is Michael Keaton. And he was, I don't know, when he was going to be Batman, it was a big controversy, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It's funny how that always happens, where you get, so Keaton, there's a controversy over Keaton being Batman. There's huge controversy over Heath Ledger being the Joker. People are like, there's no way Night's Tale kid being the Joker. Yeah, not happening.
Right.
But yeah,
Yeah, that's the best Joker, I think.
Yeah. It's so funny. I was just thinking, as I said, who's Batman? Is it Michael Keaton or is it Christian Bale? Like, no mention of any of the other people that have recently played him.
Right, Ben Affleck and the original,
Adam West, yeah.
Adam West, that's right.
Yeah.
Nah. The kids enjoyed it. They hadn't seen the movie either. So it was pretty fun to watch that again. I hadn't seen it in a long time.
Yeah. I always think of, like, you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. that was a really good line in that.
But, he's definitely doing the scenery in that movie.
What's in the books with Michael Peterson?
Oh, man, there's some cool stuff coming up. One's an Indigenous-led horror film for this summer, a Métis writer-director. It'll be her first feature. We've got that one funded or almost funded. That one's green-lit. It's going to happen. We'll shoot in the summer. It's a Descent-like horror film.
Oh, I love Descent. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wicked horror film. So it's in that kind of vein, but, you know, a bit more of an Indigenous lens on the story. And some of the characters, and we'll shoot it in the Rocky Mountains.
That's cool.
And I'm really, really excited about that project. I think it's just a really commercial project, like the type of story it is and the type of horror it is. I think it's just got a lot of really broad appeal to it, which isn't always the case. I don't necessarily care about that. But if it happens naturally, and I think that's part of the director writer's voice, is just, I think she's to some people, you know, naturally have that kind of a voice. And I think she's one of those people. So I'm excited to make that and get that out there. And then, you know, I'll make a prediction. Then we're, you know, hopefully premiering a year from now at Sundance, at the midnight program. That's my prediction. Whether I'm right or not, we'll see. It's hard to get into that festival.
That'd be cool. Yeah. And if I remember us talking before, and what I know about you is you always, you like something that speaks to something, something that has a bit of a message. I find that there's a stigma, I guess. I don't know, like on things that are commercial or commercially, you'd say commercially viable, or, you know, something that's like something that does well commercially. And there's like this, I get this in music all the time, being a bit of a metalhead, you know, you get, oh, what? Yeah, it's, oh, they gone commercial, but it doesn't mean it's not good. It still kicks ass.
It's not necessarily a bad thing at all. Like the sense of very commercial horror film with, I think, a lot of broad appeal because of the characters in it, the way it tells the story, the way the scares work. And you're also getting a bit of a fresh view into the caving and the female group going out on that weekend. Like it just did a couple of things that had a bit of freshness to it as well.
Do you know what's really cool about that movie? Watching it and then kind of realizing after, it's like, wait a minute, this was an all-female cast, but it wasn't marketed as like, hey, this is an all-female thing, and they didn't get overly political with it, like being all-female.
Yeah,
but it was just really good, and it just happens to be all-female.
That could become a measure of sort of the type of equality that I think people are talking about and trying to approach, where you're not necessarily, you know, making those distinctions that it's a female director or, you know, a BIPOC creative team or whatever. And it's just about, you know, the project that's made, and everyone has, you know, relative access to make these things. They're not rare enough that they need to be mentioned.
Another really great example is like Alien, like the Alien series, like Aliens, right? It's like Sigourney Weaver, and you never think of, oh, this is a great movie for women, right? It's just a great movie, and Sigourney Weaver is the main focus of it.
Which sci-fi actually has a really strong tradition of making female protagonists, having female protagonists.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a real strong tradition of that. I'm hoping we'll be one of those kinds of films that are able to sort of just become an awesome horror film that people are really, really into because it's scary. It's got some cool new ideas in it. The monster is pretty awesome. And there's a lot of tension and creep factor. Also, there's a spine to the story that has a social and a thematic relevance to the story and the characters in the story, which I think it just makes something a little bit thicker or more solid in terms of storytelling. I think we can do some really exciting things with it. And I'm really excited about working with this director and, you know, helping get this film made. We've been developing it for the last year and a half, 2 years or something like that. So it's just cool that it's got this pathway, and now we know we're going to be making it this summer.
So is that just like the working title, or is that like the whole...
The working title is called Dark Woods. I'm terrible at titles. So will that become the title? Maybe, maybe not. At some point, these almost always become conversations, and they usually have to do with the marketing of a film. You know, who knows? We'll see. But...
And then you also kind of probably try and jump on something relevant that's happening at that time. So, you know, and marketing is a funny thing. So yeah, the naming of the movie is not going to happen until probably much closer to the day.
Well, that'll be the name that we work with. When we're finished, we hand it off to whoever is selling or distributing the film. And then what happens is sometimes in different territories and stuff, they'll be like, oh, when you translate this Dark Woods into, you know, Japanese, it doesn't quite work because of this. So they might come up with alternate names, or there'll be another film that's named too closely to that that's come out recently and they don't want it to get mixed up with it. The more base version of that is they'll be like, oh, it should be lower in the alphabet, because then when people are scrolling through, they'll see yours first. So, I mean, there's a million different reasons why a title might change. The only thing I know is that that is something that I don't feel like I'm the best person to come up with the best title. And I think that's a real weakness I have, and I'm okay with it. Someone's got a better one, cool.
You know, not a lot of people are able to do that, to say, okay, you know, maybe that's not my best thing is on the naming of titles and whatnot, but okay, your strengths are.
Yeah, I think I'm good at building teams and spotting and developing talent. And then also trusting my gut in terms of what I think is a good project or a worthwhile project or team to pursue the project with. I don't have that much time to write anymore. you know, most of the stuff that I'm getting is already written or there's a draft written. So oftentimes you're dealing with something that's, you know, early in its writing stage. So I need to read it and be like, oh, this has something really great in it. It's not there yet, but I can see it. You know, not everyone can read it at that stage and kind of see the potential in the project. So, you know, it'd be like spotting like hockey players early on or soccer players. I certainly wouldn't be able to do that, but I'm sure there's people that are able to just key in on whatever those things are that they know that that person's going to be killer when they're older, if they develop the right way.
That's super cool. And what do you love doing the most? Like, what's your favorite thing? You mentioned you don't have time to write.
It's often doing the thing that I'm not doing when I'm doing the other thing that I wanted to be doing when I was doing that thing. So like when I'm producing, I always want to be directing a bit more, and when I'm directing, okay to be producing. And then when I'm writing, I want to be directing, and so on and so on. I like all of them. It's always got to do more with the kind of chemistry and energy of the team. Even as a director, I mean, your project's always going to depend on, you know, the other artists and craftspeople that you're working with. And that's going to make your job harder or easier, or make your work look worse or better. So knowing that, it's always about kind of who you're working with and what everyone's bringing to it. And there's a real joy when kind of everyone's working towards the same goal and you can feel everyone just kind of really contributing to the core idea and everyone's on the same page. It's pretty special. It's like magic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it totally is. I love the idea of putting like a team together and working together for a common project, right? Especially if it's like, you know, there's a start date and end date, you know, like, okay, here's the project that we're going to do. So it's like limited time frame. So you know that there is going to be an ending, and it's not like going into work and I'm working with these same people every day. It's like, okay, here's our team and we're going to get this project done. Let's go. I find that to be a fun concept.
Very project specific. Yeah. Or project focused. And that's kind of the other thing is like, I don't know if it's easy, but I know it happens a lot. And like people I find don't always push all the way through. And it's sort of like that last 5 to 10% or whatever, you know, the end of the race, like you still have to run.
Yeah. That's when you got to turn on your jet engines, man. That's when you get...
Well, sometimes that's right. And sometimes it's really hard because you're all gassed out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're just kind of, it's just takes a lot of energy, takes, you know, 10 times as much energy to push through that last little bit. But it's also the most important thing because that's kind of what puts the polish on the project or adds that extra little thing that's going to, you don't change, it'll drive you crazy every single time you watch it for the rest of your life, and it's not going to change after that. I think it makes a big, big difference. It's hard to measure exactly, but being able to push over that, I think, is something else that I'm pretty good at, making sure I can keep my energy up and help energize everyone else.
Well, that's the important thing about a leader, right? To be producer and like bring it all together, and you have to be that, you know, pillar of support for everyone yeah. else.
Yeah, and then directing, you need other people to support you because you're just like so beat up. You're just like, oh my god. I mean, your editor becomes like your psychologist at times.
Oh, I bet there's some super interesting conversations that happen.
Yeah, and one of the other things that is going on is me and a couple partners are raising $1.25 million, and we're going to make 4 feature films with that private equity investment. We'll probably make some of them in Edmonton and then do post or some of the post in Calgary. And there are 4 really cool genre films, 2 by established directors. I'm one of those established directors. And then 2 by newer directors, but all really cool projects that I, you know, have a really good chance of making a real impact once they're made and released. Doing some pretty cool things, like one's an exorcism movie that's got a really great twist on sort of the exorcism story. Another one is, it's like a sci-fi horror where this guy creates this spray device thing that basically allows him to put his consciousness into other bodies.
That's a cool concept. I like that. That's neat.
Yeah. And then the other one is sort of a satire horror about a cannibal family who, when they eat people's brains, they take on their abilities, their strengths and weaknesses. They end up getting this singer for their daughter's 16-year-old birthday party. The daughter notices that the guy she likes is into this singer, smashes her head open and eats her brains, and then can sing like her.
Like a Wendigo, kind of.
Yeah, well, then the singer's best friend who's with her realizes what's happened and then, you know, tries to basically solve the mystery because this is a wealthy family who's somewhat untouchable and, you know, they can't prove anything. So she kind of takes it into her own hands to find justice.
That's cool. I like that too. Those are all awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they'll be really fun. I mean, we've got some really great talent here, and I think that's part of what I've been working on for the last 5 or so years. So it's time to, you know, continue that development, make these films that, you know, they're not going to be for everybody, but we're kind of making the impact in the festival world where we're able to sell them, and we're building a name for, you know, our team and making horror films and those kinds of elevated genre films in this area.
Oh, that's awesome. So here's the thing, you know, we're always talking about, you know, especially in real estate, we're talking about, okay, investing in property. And I talk a lot with investment advisors and whatnot. And if somebody wanted to, like, this, because this is kind of outside the box, like if somebody wanted to put in some money to help fund one of these movies, how do they go about getting in touch with somebody? Because there's still like, I love film. There's still a mystery about how to get involved.
We put together an investment deck that lays out sort of, you know, the projects, the team that's involved, our track record, some sales estimates from a couple of companies for some of the projects, and then sort of traditionally how these films pay back and when they pay back. You know, it's really as simple as, you know, contacting me. I can tell you how to get in touch with me. You know, my email is freshdog@gmail.com or mike@petersonpolaris.com. I can send the information. It's not an investment like a house. If you're already investing in houses, this might be an additional investment that you would do, right? And then sort of the special way that we're approaching this is we're doing it by the investment is in all 4 projects rather than 1 project, which also further mitigates the risk factor. So, you know, say 2 of them do what's expected of them and 2 of them don't. We should still hit a reasonably good spot. If all of them do pretty good, we'll be in a great spot. If one of them does really well and 2 do okay and 1 doesn't do well, then, you know, you're still kind of, the odds are going to push you into a positive place.
Like a mutual fund for like investing in film.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's a really cool concept.
This is really the test. This is the test for the bigger one. This one is like, you know, because something that always bugs me is too much overhead, right? Because you can take if you take the overhead out of these projects, you could just, you know, suck the fund dry. We're limiting overhead and we're limiting the payback to the core group. It's a much lower percentage than we could probably justify. And the main reason for that is we want to basically field test the concept in the safest environment we can, which is basically us putting in more sweat equity and not necessarily being completely compensated for it, which is fine. That's how we want to do it. And then the next time we do it, we have sort of the basis of the model built. We go back out and we do the version that's, you know, 5 times the size of this. You're mitigating the risk over a greater number of projects. You're also expanding your pool of producers and projects that you can approach, but you're still going into the thing with a set number of rules. So you're making films within a certain budget range, or if they're not in that range, this one film can only support X number of dollars and nothing more. And if they want more, they have to bring in another company to partner with them or outside investment to do that outside of the fund. So you have a clear set of rules and a small group of producers that basically are carving up the pie, and they're each responsible for, you know, developing and bringing back the number of films that they're responsible to look after within the amount of money that they're in charge of. And these are all people that have, you know, good track records and have a history of knowing how to make these things. And then we also continue to sort of grow and develop the talent pool here, because a lot of these are lower budget projects. There's more experienced people that are interested in making these things because they get a different type of creative freedom than they might on a $5 million movie. right? So for $500,000 or $600,000 or whatever the number is, I've got, you know, I don't have as much money to spend, but I also have more creative freedom with what I want to do. And I can, you know, I can take different types of risks than I might on a $5 million movie. So that's very appealing to certain types of experienced filmmakers, because they don't always get to do that. You can attract some of those people, but then you can also use it to continue to grow and develop the people that are sort of at the earlier stages of their career. And they can work with a group of, you know, producers in a safe environment where they're being shepherded along and mentored. They don't need to make all the mistakes that people often make on their first film or two.
Totally makes sense.
And we can build the labor base for all the other films that are going to be coming here in TV series that'll be coming to Alberta.
It's something that we've always kind of had, but it's, I thought we always could be so much bigger with it.
In 2017-18, British Columbia did $3.5 billion in production with film and television.
Mm-hmm.
$3.5 billion, that's like pretty serious industry.
That's good, yeah.
Ontario did $2.8 billion. Meanwhile, Alberta did $255 million. So we were growing that year. Some stuff happened with how the provincial government dealt with the film programs, and it froze for about 8 months. And then 8 months later, we have a pandemic. So you have a few factors that have prevented that growth that was happening. Meanwhile, BC is still sort of at record number of productions, even during the pandemic. So it's still a multi-billion dollar industry there. It's always been surprising to me as well why we haven't, you know, kind of pushed that as part of the plan for economic diversity for the province. And, you know, it's possible with the way things are going with some of
the... Yeah, with the news that we've just recently heard, yeah.
You know, maybe now they can see why that might be a good industry to start being a little bit more aggressive in terms of promoting and trying to attract. There's a couple of things that you have to do to probably be able to meet that demand. And that would be you have to have the crew base, right? Because you can only make so many, as many movies as you have crews to make. There's some time it takes to learn those different skill sets to make a movie. So it's not something you can walk into sort of right away. But the good news is most of it's sort of labor and experience based. You don't need sort of intensive infrastructure, right? So in terms of a cost, it's relatively, you know, low cost, because it's really based on the financing and the labor.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if there's a shortage of it, yeah, definitely. And that's also great for the economy too. Like, we should be pushing this in Alberta, I think, and especially because we've had our hand in it enough, you know, over the years. You look at all the great things that, you know, even very commercial things like Fargo and, you know, and different movies that were done, you know, Revenant and Inception even. I'm just trying to, off the top of my head, thinking of like big ones, but.
If it's $3.5 billion in BC and $2.8 billion in Ontario, we're a smaller market and a smaller center than that. I don't think it'd be a good goal to necessarily try to reach those. I don't know how realistic that would be to reach those numbers. But if we're talking, you know, $1 billion, that seems like a realistic goal.
Yeah.
This could be a $1 billion industry. And then, you know, obviously that money circulates and goes to people that own hotels and restaurants, in addition to the direct labor and all that. Anyways, there's tons of benefits. So we'll see what happens.
That's super cool. So you have the four projects on the go with a kind of like the group funding idea. Anything else on the go right now? Is that's the big push?
There's a few TV series that we're developing as well.
Oh, cool.
There's a co-production with Luxembourg and a BC creative team. And then there's a TV series with a South African partner. It's kind of like a historical, dramatic, thriller type thing. It takes place in the setting of Johannesburg when they started to drop the gold standard.
Oh, okay.
The African economy changed, but that was also the beginning of the architects of apartheid. Big political shift. There's a big economic shift, and sort of tells a story through some Black South Africans, Dutch Afrikaners, and some British immigrants.
That's cool. So we talked about the projects that you're working on right now. Anything strike your fancy lately? Anything that you've been watching? Because also being a movie lover, anything that you've checked out in the last few months that you're a big fan of?
Yeah, there's two things. One that I'm watching with my wife called Younger. It's like a sitcom with Hilary Duff and other people, but I don't know their names. about a 40-year-old woman who, you know, had a kid and got out of the publishing industry and is trying to get a job again and basically has to reinvent herself and lie that she's a 26-year-old and then gets hired as an assistant in the industry that she used to, you know, be higher up in, but she just wants to work. She's divorced now and trying to get her shit together. So she's living this lie, starts dating a 26-year-old. Anyways, she moves to Brooklyn. It's really fun. It's a fun series that I can watch with my wife. And then the other one is 30 Coins on HBO or Crave. A really awesome Spanish director. But it's a series about a priest who was a former exorcist and the 30 coins that, you know, were given to Judas to betray Christ. They're looking for them in the, you know, the present. And they have some kind of power that they can give people. So people in the, there's a cabal in the church that's secretly trying to collect these. So it's kind of like a supernatural horror thriller with some comedy elements set in Spain, dealing with kind of Roman Catholic stuff and the relationship between the mayor of this town and this veterinarian who they kind of love each other, but they're both in other relationships, and supernatural events kind of keep occurring in this town. So it's almost like a case of the week, but then there's a greater mystery that they're trying to solve over the course of the season. Alex de la Iglesias, I'm saying that right. But anyways, he's a wicked director. So I was really excited when I heard about this. He's a real pleasure to watch. He's got like a really great dark sense of humor, executes just really well made. It's fun. Fun characters too, especially the priest who's like a former boxer, bald-headed priest who kind of maybe doesn't believe in, you know, demons and things anymore. And
yeah, it's kind of like 1 foot outside the door. And
grizzled old veteran.
There's a lot of good stuff coming out of Spain, I find. Like, I think Platform was...
Yeah, I think you're right.
Platform was, and then, man, I watched this, like, series just recently. Again, it was like a mini-series. Oh, can't even remember what it was called. But it was about a thief. His dad was, like, framed for something, and then he became a thief, and he became, like, this master, like, master of disguises and pickpocket. And, man, I can't remember what it was called, but it's on Netflix anyway.
Oh, yeah?
It's a really good one. I think it's Spanish as well.
Was that Lupin?
Lupin, yes. Lupin.
Oh, French. Yeah, I heard
it. Oh, French. Name. Oh, yeah, no, yeah, French. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah.
But, I mean, both places make great stuff.
Yeah.
And it seems like they might be making more often or more that's coming our way. But mm-hmm. Spain's always had a really great history of making kind of, you know, fantastical films.
Money Heist, that was Spain. I think Money Heist was Spain.
Yeah. But, I mean, like the Sitges Film Festival, which is, you know, the oldest... And you know, fantastic film festival. I think it's over 50 years old. It's still going strong. It's still kind of the premier place to premiere your film in Europe, you know, in the genre world. They've got this long, long history of kind of being a part of and making those kinds of movies and shows.
I have to check that out. Stay tuned for Bloodthirsty, because that's going to be out in April for everybody, you know, that's kind of looking for something. I know a lot of the people that listen kind of like the horror genres that I'm into.
Actually, something else I'm doing tomorrow, being a metal fan, you might like this. There's a movie called Sound of Metal.
I've seen stuff out for that. What's that all about?
Heavy metal drummer that loses his hearing, and he's an ex-heroin junkie. And he loses his hearing and he's kind of got to, you know, figure out how to deal with his life now that he doesn't have the band and drumming and those dreams necessarily in front of him.
You can watch online, right?
Yeah, I think I watched it on Google Play. Tomorrow night, I'm interviewing that director for the Directors Guild Canada on there's some kind of nationwide podcast. So I'll be interviewing him and talking about directing and making that movie and getting into the nitty gritty of film.
I'll definitely be trying to check that out for sure.
Yeah. There's early buzz on that film for an Oscar. Who knows, right? But that's how it's being talked about in the press currently. So I'm sure these types of events are part of what they're doing to make sure that, they're publicizing it well. I always am curious how directors make their movies because we don't get to watch each other work that often. So cool to, you know, be able to ask those questions, especially through the Directors Guild, where everyone wants you to talk about really nerdy, nitty-gritty directing type questions, which is what I love to do.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, even the stuff that I can't even grasp because I'm not in the industry, I do love hearing that and kind of putting the pieces together and be like, oh, that's, you know, a little bit of a behind-the-curtain kind of idea. I love hearing all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, well, the one actor, like one of the supporting actors in it, he's really great in the film. I don't know if I'm saying his name correct, but Paul Rassi, kind of like the head counselor at this deaf community where they're training people how to sign and, you know, figure out their life. In real life, he's also a lead singer of a Black Sabbath tribute band.
Oh, cool.
Anyway, I don't know. There's like all these fun little details I've learned about the movie that satisfy my also, you know, heavy metal interest.
Oh, nice. Fellow metalhead. yeah. Love it. Right on. So yeah, other than that, reach out to you for sure if you're looking to kind of get into some kind of investing with film, or you want to be just supportive of the film industry here in Alberta. And yeah, anything else you kind of want to mention for today?
I think that's it. I don't know why, but I'm feeling really optimistic about this coming year. Hopefully I'm not fooling myself, but I think there's some cool stuff coming up. I think in 6 months, it's going to be insanely busy again.
I'm pretty optimistic as well. I'm generally an optimistic kind of guy, but I'm feeling like, maybe it's just me, but I'm feeling so much like pent up, let's do stuff.
Yeah.
Right? That like, I'm super excited for the things that are supposed to be coming out for the last year. So I'm excited for all that, and I'm excited for all the new stuff, and I'm excited for all the people that have had their creativity, like, you know, yourself and like other people that you might work with that have had to pull back, right, and didn't have that outlet for a while.
Well, I think everyone's been not as productive as they thought they were going to be. Everyone went in and had their list of all the, you know, I'm going to learn Cantonese and...
Yeah, that's me too. I had so many big dreams of what I was going to do, but actually it was a little bit busier this year than last year, I think. So
that's what happened to me too. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I've come up the list. I'm going to take these art courses and do this other stuff. And I was like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah. So, okay, actually, so while I have you, before we started the podcast here, we were talking about, man, it'd be nice to get out and grab a beer. What, or get out to a pub, is, I don't know if beer is your thing. Do you have a favorite brewery, or do you have a favorite even type of beer? If you don't want to single out a brewery because they're all good, but what's your jam?
Well, you know, my favorite go-to consistent one is the Last Best IPA.
Oh, Last Best, yeah.
Last Best IPA is probably my favorite, most consistent one. You know, I always want to try new ones because that's part of the fun for me. So I'm always picking up new ones. Sometimes they work for me, sometimes they don't. But that's sort of my go-to, that and Red Racer. Red Racer IPA.
Oh, yeah. Red Racer's a good one too.
These French ciders, they're hard to track down. There's only a couple places in Calgary where I've been able to find them. But Norman ciders from Normandy.
Oh, okay.
They're like kind of earthy and a little dry. And they're just like their own kind of flavor world. Anyways, they're awesome. So I pick those up whenever I find them, always buy like a bunch of bottles. So now I have many bottles. Think I'm never going to be able to find them again. But that's something that I'm like, it's like the best thing to drink on like a Sunday afternoon or something like that. You know, if you're just like chilling, the sun's coming through the window, even if it's cold outside, it feels like you got your socks off and your feet on the earth.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. We'll have to check those out for sure.
They're worth it. I've been trying to push everyone into them. There could be a little boom on them if anyone's listening to me.
A bunch of my friends, we were all about Strongbow for years and years, and then we kind of moved away from that, and we're doing some other ciders there for a while. And
yeah, Strongbow and Stout was a great combo.
Getting big trouble for calling it a black and tan, but a Crown Float.
Crown Float, that's right.
Yeah.
I used to drink those before, you know, we have so many breweries now. It's amazing.
Yeah, that used to be my jam, it was Crown Float. I would do that all the time. And people would, like, look at this and they'd come, what are you drinking? Because it'd be the half and half, right? The black on the top and the gold on the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Kensington Pub, I used to go there all the time and drink a few. Man, I can hardly wait to go to the Ship and Anchor.
Yeah, the Ship, that's your jam?
Yeah, I'm even wearing my, I'm not sponsored, but they should sponsor me. I don't know.
The Ship.
Anyway, yeah, I love that place. It's always very consistently the same and, you know, friendly enough.
It's great because you just have like, there's so many people to talk to and everybody's just, you know, together and chatting with everybody else. It's a good environment for sure.
Yeah. So I'm very much looking forward to that when things are open up again.
That's awesome. As we go here, any films that are coming out that you're looking forward to, not necessarily that you're involved in, or maybe that you are, that are around the corner?
You know, I honestly don't even know what's coming out right away. But one thing I saw recently that I really enjoyed is Possessor. David Cronenberg's son, I think, Brandon Cronenberg, really great cinematographer, Kareem Hussein, Canadian movie. I mean, it's really, really grim, a really bleak, grim movie, but it's yeah. really well done. And if you're
nice. You
know, okay with that ride, you'll love it, I think.
Yeah, no, that's
horror sci-fi.
Horror sci-fi, nice. Yeah, I'll definitely, that's Possessor.
Yeah.
I bet you my buddy Mike, we did a 666 episode around Halloween where we did our favorite six horror movies. My one friend, Mike, he's the Necronaut. He's a metal DJ. He used to DJ out in Norway at the Rock Inn.
Oh, wow.
And then had Visha Liu, who's like a contortionist here in Calgary and does all sorts of wild photos and whatnot. But so the three of us did our favorite horror movies.
When you guys get together for a pint, invite me. I'd love to hang out with that group. That sounds
yeah, like yeah. Do you know what? Maybe we'll do another film one. I'll get. I have another buddy. His name is Ty. I call him IMDb because he is hilarious. You mentioned like some actor be like, oh yeah, when he debuted in that Burger King commercial in the 80s. It's like he just knows everything. So yeah, we'll have to get maybe the Necronaut and Ty and Mike Peterson will do some movie stuff.
Cool, yeah. Throw in some metal. Sounds great.
Yeah.
Metal.
That'll be wicked. Okay. Well, Mike, really great as always talking to you. And until next time, stay epic.
Thanks again for listening to Epic Phelan. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, give me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Real Ryan Phelan, and visit my website at thecalgaryrealestateguy.com. Until next time, stay epic.